say hi, everybody.
Hi there. Hi there.
Okay, so sorry I'm a little bit late. Are there any announcements? No? Okay. I am not ready to give a description of what went on. I can get my notes together at some other time, but the NRC, National Research Council Climate Change Education Roundtable was held last week on Thursday and Friday. It was a very good meeting. We had an overview of the outcomes of the workshop that occurred in October and talked about next steps. And what I do know is that the next workshop, which means one that will be more open to the broader community, will be in June, I think June 9th and 10th. And the focus of that one will be on K-12 climate change education.
Wow, okay.
And I am going to probably be on that steering committee. So,
I'm sorry, what was the topic of that?
Climate change is education, that K-12.
K-12, good.
K-12, yes. So the last one was focused on the public and decision makers. The last workshop was held in October. This meeting that we just had was more of a planning meeting. So we spent time. There was a couple that they have funding for. One of them is the next workshop, which like I said, was on climate change education for K-12. There were other topics that were discussed. I think probably a half a dozen in terms of future efforts. One potentially on the business community and business schools. And I'm not remembering the others right now, but I could. You know what? What I'll do is probably try to summarize my notes. I did take. And you can't take it notes during that. It's just not tremendously readable the way because I was just taking them as we went along. But I will provide that input at some point. But the one that I know that is going to be coming up and will happen in June 9th and 10th, is the workshop for climate change education for K-12.
Great.
So, okay, are there any other announcements?
Tamara, can you share some of that with us? I was at the October one, didn't get enough notice to be able to make this one, but I'd love to know if they gave us something published from the outcome of the October roundtable.
The report's not ready yet, but they are putting one together, and I will certainly share it once it's available. They just had sort of an overview in terms of a verbal talk, but they didn't provide any documents. So, but that will be coming, and I will share that with everybody once that's available. Everybody thought that was a very, very helpful workshop in terms of pointing to communities and ways of engaging communities that are not automatically already involved in climate change issues or with communities that aren't usually involved with these kinds of issues, and how to basically address those communities, especially those who tend to be not as tend to be deniers or skeptics.
And the draft papers from that are still up on the roundtable website because I was just looking at them the other day from the October meeting. That is
yes. But there have been no updates since that. Oh, have any of them been signed? Some of them were in draft form. Did they end up in final format?
Yeah, I don't know if they've been updated.
You know, it's the papers the papers that were commissioned?
Yes.
Yeah, I can find out about those. I couldn't find anything more than the draft ones from last October myself. So I'll see if I can find I'll ask if those might be available.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Jay in Wisconsin, UW Extension. I guess I should announce something that's going on today here. They released this morning of a document called Wisconsin's Changing Climate Impacts and Adaptation. It's from the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts. It's their 2011 report. Elaine Andrews, who I believe is a member of this group, and David Leibel, I don't know if he is or not, had a role in this document that's been released. The two of them and myself are on the outreach committee that's going to be, that is currently, I should say, working on a strategy for outreach and public education regarding the findings in this adaptation study. And it's very Wisconsin-centric, and the Nelson Institute managed to, I think it's called Backcast, with a lot of model data and tailor it just to our states, geared for the public. I'll send out a link to it on the email list for this group, and it's a pretty interesting report.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. One of the things you could potentially do is we have a place on the site, and so for Scott, when you get the link, if you get the document, you can put it under a documents page and have regional reports or something like that.
Sounds great. That's a great idea.
Tamara, this is Kim Lytle.
Yes, hi, Kim.
Hi. The first issue of Beyond Weather and the Water Cycle is available now. And I will send an email out to the listserv requesting feedback. We're hoping that we can get some more of NASA and other resources embedded into the content. So it's at beyondweather.ehe.osu.edu. We just opened up the search engine, so you won't find it on Google yet, but I will send out an email.
Okay.
Can you say your name again?
Yeah, this is Kim Lytle, L-I-G-H-T-L-E.
And you're sending an email looking for NASA resources.
Actually, we've highlighted a few of the resources, but just from this group in general, if you can see some things that would be appropriate for an elementary audience, and this first issue is all about literacy, the climate literacy essential principle number one. So that's what we're looking for, resources about the sun. And, you know, just give it a look, and any feedback that you have, we would be very appreciative.
Well, I'm going to be talking about NASA resources, so.
Right now.
Soon.
Yep, and that's one of the reasons I'm here.
Good. All right, so hopefully you'll get what you need.
Okay. Any other announcements or comments? Okay, if not, then we'll move on to our presentation for today. The site and the slides have been posted on the website. Laura Faye Tenenbaum is going to talk about It's a Feast, Climate Research Door on the NASA's Global Climate Change website. So with that, I'll turn it over to Laura.
Hi, everybody. Just a little bit of a correction to start with. My name is spelled twice incorrectly and once correctly. So probably it's better to get my name spelled right. If you look, I'm on the Climate Literacy Network schedule page, and then the first time it's spelled with an A, and then it's spelled correctly the second time with an E, and then when you download the slides, that's actually the incorrect spelling of my name. So just so everybody, if you want to kind of find me, it's probably better if you have my name. So if you downloaded the slides, the name of the slideshow is actually spelled incorrectly. But if you look at the first slide where it says my name and my title and my email address, that's the correct spelling. Just so that everybody knows my name, which is always a good thing. And then the second thing I wanted to say is just I'm so glad that so many people are attending this telecon, and it's good to hear your voices, and you know, I look forward to sharing these things with you. So thank you for being here. Okay, so I think the reason that I wanted to present is sometimes I've noticed that a lot of people do go to our website, and we track it. And a lot of people, what they end up doing, the most popular page is the evidence page, which for most websites, they've got these bars down the left-hand side, and it's really the first thing that people click on, and people tend to go to that page more than anything else, which I think is wonderful. But at the same time, I'm hoping to encourage not only the people on this telecon, but for the people on the telecon who have all their other contacts, to go deeper into the website. And I just thought that I could share with you some of my favorite places on the website, and that I know that there's, you know, you guys are all doing different things around climate. Some of you are educators, some of you are speakers, some of you, you know, all the different things that everybody does. But to utilize these resources in a way that's perhaps deeper, going deeper than, you know, maybe the first two or three clicks on the page. So that's what the purpose of this is. And it's, and I guess that's why I titled it, it's a feast, it's a banquet, rather than just a snack, right? So far many of you have perhaps had a tidbit or a taste or a snack, and I'm inviting you to actually have the entire feast. Before I get started talking about myself, if you'll go ahead and click onto the second slide, and you'll see actually the first slide, all my information, my phone number, my email. My job is to be the person who gives out resources, NASA resources about climate. So if you need resources, if you want to find resources, if you don't know where to find them, you're having trouble, please contact me. You can phone me. You can email me. So, and I'm your girl. Okay? I wanted to also introduce one of my colleagues who's a recent member of the Climate Literacy Network. I think she's on the phone right now. Margaret,
yes,
are you
here?
Okay,
yes,
so her name's Margaret Srinivasan. She's the newest member of the Climate Literacy Network, and she's one of my colleagues. You'll see at the top of the page, it's clevel.jpl.nasa.gov, and that's a screen grab of the website. So JPL NASA has three ocean surface topography satellites. The old Topex Poseidon that, you know, was the first or one of the first to do global sea surface topography analysis. And then we have Jason 1 and Jason 2. And Margaret heads up this website that includes everything that you see in the highlights, monthly features, benefits. There's a literature database, everything El Nino and La Nina. OST stands for Ocean Surface Topography, and there's a science team that meets. There's pages about the mission and data maps. Margaret, if you go to the second slide, you'll actually see what Margaret looks like. Actually, it's the third slide, but it's the second ocean surface topography slide. Did you want to say anything, Margaret?
Well, I just wanted to say that we, you know, in addition to these missions that we have operating, of course, we've got Jason 3 in the works, which is going to be led by NOAA this time because it's gone. The Jason series is going operational, and so we're handing it over to NOAA. And then we have the surface water and ocean topography, which is the SWOT mission, SWOT, which is a wide swath altimeter mission, which is going to vastly improve the data sets for ocean surface topography and therefore you know, the climate science that goes with that. Also, the SWOT mission will take the data much closer to the coast, which of course, you know, the coastal regions is something that our missions traditionally don't see very well because it's we have some problems with the land interfering with the data. So that's very exciting because, of course, most of the people live near the coast, and that data is going to be very valuable. That's going to be launching in 2016, and it actually has its separate website, but I'm overseeing that as well.
So you'll see that Margaret's email is down there at the bottom of the page 3, and page 2 is a link to the sea level. So any kind of... we also have the sea level site linked from our site, the climate.nasa.gov site. So anything sea level rise, El Nino, anything sea surface topography, you can find there. And Margaret welcomes you to contact her as well.
Yes, please do.
Okay, so I'm now going to move on to slide number 4. And this is just a screen grab of our main page. And what I did was I put these big yellow arrows, and this is kind of the places where I'm like, if this was, again, the buffet analogy, and I was the waiter, I would say these are the favorite dishes that you should really try because they're amazing. Everybody probably knows that there's this main screen that where these flashing images go, and they're the news and the current data and this kind of stuff. But what I'm hoping to do, and this is kind of the topics that I'm going to cover today, if you see up on the top left is a key indicators. Then we're going to look at some interactives, the images of change, climate reel, the educators button, and then over there on the right, the eyes on the earth 3D. So the last time I presented, we actually had, software that we were using last time, and there was all kinds of problems, so we just decided this time to not do it live, but to do it with a PowerPoint, and, you know, anybody's, of course, welcome to follow along on the website and, you know, click on all these buttons live, but I'm just kind of hoping to hand-hold and walk through some of these buttons and kind of find out what's interesting, and I'm going to go it in order. So the order that you see there is the order that I'm going to go. So if we'll go to the next slide, that's the key indicators. So that's slide number 5. So let's say I clicked on the key indicators, and this is something similar to what would come up. The other way to get to the key indicators, if you see in that little blue box where it says vital signs of the planet, 5 key indicators. So you can scroll over, if you go to the main page and scroll over, these 5 key indicators are right at the surface, and they're Arctic sea ice minimum, carbon dioxide, sea level, global temperature, and land ice. So we kind of think about that as, sometimes they're called key indicators, but they're vital signs. It's kind of like if the planet was alive, which really it is, and you would check its pulse and its heart rate and its breathing. So that's how we think of it. They're the key indicators. And all these 5 things are updated. So each one, let's just kind of look at one at a time. So we'll look at sea level, and they all have, have 2 graphs. So one is like graphs that go back before the satellites were launched. So if you look at, let's say, the key indicators, it'll go, like for sea level, it starts at 1870, right? So that's ground-based data from 1870 to 2000. And then on the right, you see the satellite data, which goes since the satellite was launched up until, and we try to update these quarterly and sometimes more often. So it's very near real-time data that's coming from the satellite. So those are the top 2. And then each one of the key indicators also has a graphic with a slider bar, and you won't be able to slide it on the PowerPoint, but you can see where the graphics are for all 5 of them. They're down at the bottom, and there is a slider bar graphic, so you can kind of mouse over it, click on it, and drag it, and you can see, let's say, for example, sea level, as you drag it from the time that the satellite was launched in 1994 all the way to the most recent data in color. And that's true for all 5 of the key indicators. So what I'm hoping people do with this stuff is that they incorporate it in their learning modules. They incorporate it in their teacher professional development lessons. They incorporate it in lectures about climate change that any of you on the telecon may be doing. Because this is, you know, either it's near real-time satellite data that's really, really strong evidence for all these 5 key indicators. Does anybody have any questions on any of this?
Question, how often are these updated?
We try to update them quarterly, but sometimes they're updated more frequently than that.
Thank you.
So, in fact, a lot of them were just updated. So if you'll see, let's, for example, the carbon dioxide, it's good through December 2010. So it was just updated about a month ago. Sea surface temperatures, good through 2010. Arctic sea ice through 2010. So we try to update them very regularly. Pretty much as soon as the data comes in, we try to make it go live. Yeah?
Yeah, this is Marta. I was asking whether you know, there was a, whether you could see when it was updated, and I see that you can. So
you can, yeah. Normally, yeah. Right down, right below it, and I know you can't zoom in on the slide, but if you're actually on the page itself, yeah. Right under the label, it says data updated 12/10/10, so in December, and then the carbon dioxide was also 12/10, so it looks like everything was updated 12/10. And so, we try to keep these as close to current as absolutely possible. And I think they're really useful for a whole lot of different reasons. You've got the ground data, you've got the satellite data for graphing if you want the students to do graphing, or if certain people like to see visual, and then other people like to actually interact. So you can, with your cursor, slide across that color graph and interact with it yourself. So a lot of people actually like the ability to interact with those slider bars.
Yeah. This is Marta. With EcoArts Connections. This is so great.
I'm glad. Okay. Because I also, actually, you just reminded me that some of you guys have been on these telecons and you really know me already. And I want to apologize if you haven't seen this before, but you telling me that it's great means you haven't seen it before. So thank you for giving me that feedback. Was there anything else?
Yeah. How are you getting the word out about that this exists?
That's one of my jobs is, like, right now, I'm saying it's a feast, exclamation point, come eat, dine, buffet. So I'm hoping that, you know, you guys as part of my team on the Climate Literacy Network will, you know, participate with me to, you know, yell from the highest mountaintop and use this stuff. So that's, you know, this is one of the ways that I'm doing it right now is to kind of share and tell people and go out and give presentations, and, you know, that's what I do all day long is try to share this.
Right. So there's no, like, press, or maybe it's already happened and I just am finding out myself. I work in the arts community and with scientists, and so that's why I'm late on this, probably.
Jammer, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. You said that these things are updated in December, but I'm on the website, and it says latest measurement October 2010.
Where are you looking?
Where is that?
Carbon dioxide concentration, 2005 to the present, and it says the latest measurement October, not December.
Sometimes, okay, the only thing I can say, because I'm not on your computer, sometimes you have to empty the cache. If you go on the website pretty often, then your computer will go to the not updated site. So sometimes you've got to go, you know, where it says that you're on Firefox or Safari, and you empty the cache, and then your computer kind of refreshes it again. So that's my only guess, because on mine, it says updated 12/10/10.
It does on mine also.
We can talk about this later, but I just reloaded it.
You reloaded it and it worked, or it didn't?
It still says October.
On your...
And mine says December.
Did you try emptying your cache?
No. I'll see if I can figure out how to do that later. Go ahead.
Apologies for that, because it gets, and I have to do that on my computer too. Like, I'll get an email from somebody on my team saying, look at the new upload, and I have to first empty my cache, because sometimes the computer will recognize, you know, the URL and just go back to the old one rather than update the new one. So if any of you guys ever have problems with that, empty the cache and the new one should hopefully upload. The only thing I could also think, Tamara, is maybe somewhere it says October and I'm looking at the wrong date and there's a mistake. So it should say it right underneath the label to sea level date updated and then CO2 date updated right underneath the label.
Oh yeah, there it says, yes it does say 12/10/10.
So where do you see the October problem?
Okay, so with you, so for let's go to carbon dioxide.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and then the top graph on the right where the flashing dot is?
Yeah.
That is his latest measurement October.
Oh, right, if you mouse over the dot. It does say latest measurements. Okay, so what that means is that the measurement from the satellite was in October, and that the date that the webmasters updated it on our website was in December.
Oh, okay.
So that's what that means. And that's a good point that you're making. If you mouse over the dot, it'll tell you the exact date of the satellite measurement.
Very cool.
So, I know, how fun. So it is interactive, and I think people tend to like that, end users. I mostly interact with students, so I find that the students like the interactive aspects of it, the fact that there are slider bars and moused over points. So again, I'm hoping that anybody who's writing, currently engaged in writing curriculum, writing lectures, include any of this stuff in the material that you're writing, and, you know, help yourself. And again, you've got my email. If you need help accessing it or problems with it or questions, that's what I do all day long, is hopefully guide people in the right direction. So is there any other question about the key indicators before we move on to the next slide? Okay, so I'm now going to slide number 6. And this is one of the other things with the big yellow arrow on the left side, and it's called interactive. And if you click on to the interactives, you'll see what's over here on the left. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 types of interactive. There's the climate time machine, the sea level viewer, the ice viewer, a series of climate quizzes, and another sort of interactive called How Hot is Earth? And I think it's really impossible for me to go through holding everybody's hand for all of these. I just want you to know that they're there, and I thought I'd go through one of them with you to just show you kind of what we call an interactive. I'm not even sure that most people know what an interactive is, just the average layperson. You know, if I say the word interactive, are people saying, what is that? Or they go, oh, I know what it is, so maybe I'll just do a quick survey. Do people know what an interactive is?
Can you say what you think it is? Because it might be
I'm going to.
A different language.
Yeah, I think that's my question to you, is my next 4 slides are all about what's an interactive. And I'm not sure that I could define it. I would more have, like, maybe it could be defined, but I don't know that I have the skills to define it. I could more, like, show you what I have as an interactive, and then that would be the definition of it. But I'm looking for kind of a better, more exciting word. It doesn't, to me, it just doesn't sound as awesome as it really is. So, someone's clicking on the sea level viewer. I can hear it.
Yeah.
So, any comments on the word interactive or what that means?
Can you just say what you think, what it is to you?
Me, an interactive is something. It's not quite a video game. So it's somewhere between like a blank a page that you read like a textbook is one extreme, where it's talking to you or watching a TV show where you're the audience is passive. But it's not as fully involved as a 3D immersive video game where you drive it. It's kind of halfway in between. You have to click, the viewer, the audience, has to click on and interact with the product a little bit. So they've got to either mouse over or click, or it asks the person to participate in their, for lack of a better word, learning or interacting with the computer.
This is Alan Gould. I've sometimes used the word animation in connection with interactive, and so it's an interactive animation.
It's an animated interactive or interactive animation. Anyway, I'm still playing around, and maybe that word interactive will come more mainstream in our society.
Well, this is Tamara. I think that use the word interactive, and I think it is something in between. It's not just for animations, although you can have an animation that isn't interactive, where somebody can control where, stop and start, and see and look at things at different speeds. But there are other kinds of interactives where you can set levels of things and see what the impact is. And it's not really a model, and it's not really an experiment, but I think the term, what a user does, it does interact with the material, make something happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
right.
I think we're agreed on that. Yeah, the user has to interact with the material rather than a passive observer. So,
yeah, take initiative. They have to take initiative, not just have it blasted at them.
Exactly. And one of the things that I've noticed in the classroom is that it is more immersive when either I teach both a lecture and I used to teach a lab, but in both the lecture and the lab, when the students were able to interact with the product, they became, you know, more immersed in it, they were visualized it better, they had more fun rather than just kind of being a passive viewer of, let's say, a video or a lecture, the students could interact. And, you know, coming from the education background, I would imagine that would be true, not just in education, but would be true kind of, you know, more generalized, that interacting would make people more immersed and help understand kind of more complex scientific concepts rather than just sitting there being a passive viewer. So I encourage you to go to the Time Machine and the Sea Level Viewer, and certainly there's 5 quizzes. We've talked about these quizzes before. I'm in the process of writing a 6th quiz that should go live before the Aquarius launch June is when Aquarius is launching. But I thought we'd just look for a minute at the Global Ice Viewer, and I would kind of talk about some of the features. So the Global Ice Viewer is the newest of the interactives. So right now I'm on page 7 of the slideshow, the Global Ice Viewer. So I'm just giving you a little bit of a taste of the Ice Viewer. When you click on it, it kind of pops up, and you see that there's 4 choices: glaciers, Greenland, Arctic, and Antarctica. So the main screen, there's kind of 4 choices, and then it just talks a little bit about, you know, sentinels of climate change and the Earth's ice. So if you click on one of them, so let's say you clicked on glaciers, what would happen is that you'd see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 red flashing dots. And if you mouse over any of these dots, it kind of, some images come up if you mouse over, and then if you click on the dot, another page opens, and each of the dots has before and after glacier images. So there's one, there's the Alaska glaciers, the Rockies, the Alps, the Andes, there's Kilimanjaro, other tropical glaciers in Indonesia, there's the Himalayas. So we picked glaciers around the world, and I just gave you an example of Alaska down there on the bottom third. You see these before and after images. So there's many. There's not just one image for each dot. In Alaska, there's actually 17 before and after. So you see the dates. The one that I have pulled up there is 1909 is the glacier on the left, and 2004 is the glacier on the right. And then underneath, there's some description, and it also gives the dates, because a lot of people, when we first started putting these up, people were like, well, one's taken in the summer and one's taken in the winter, and we're like, nah. If you look down on the bottom, the photographers actually wrote down and recorded the dates, so there's the copyright, the name of the photographer, and the date. So mostly they were taken either within the same day or even within the same week of each other. So I found that this is really helpful in the classroom, and someone was asking about, before, it was Kim, you were talking about, was it middle school or grade school students, different ideas? Is Kim still around?
Yeah, this is Kim. I was talking about elementary
school. So one of the things that we like to do with that I suggest that elementary school do, that because they really like these before and after photos, you can separate them into groups, the elementary school children, and then just have them like discuss, let's say, what's the difference between the two, and they can make lists, and they can then pick their favorite images, and then they can, you know, make little different presentations to the class and kind of talk about, you know, what might be the effect. So I think the elementary school kids can really learn a lot from these before. It reminded me when I first started doing it of, remember when you used to go to the dentist and there were those little fun books, the fun books where they did the notice the difference between the two photos?
Yeah.
Remember those things in the dentist? It kind of reminded me of those. I can't remember. It was like the highlights book where they had the two before and after pictures, and you had
it's
to
like and different.
Yeah, exactly. So I like to do that with the younger kids, and they're, you know, it's something that they're already familiar with. Those, what's the difference between these two photos? So I can't remember the total number of before and after ice images on this whole thing. I know there's 17 just from Alaska. So there's a whole bunch, and they're really fun to play with. The other thing is the About button there. All four, the glaciers, Greenland, Arctic, and Antarctica, have an About button on the right, and when that pops up, it has really gorgeous images, and it talks about glaciers or talks about Greenland and gives you all other kind of scientific data and or interesting facts about that particular area, and that could be helpful for both the students if they're a little bit older or the teachers or anybody who wants to potentially give a presentation or a talk or write an article, which I know all of you guys on this telecon do some sort of thing like that. You're involved in that kind of stuff. So please help yourself to anything on this global ice viewer. So that's just glaciers, right?
Laura, just try it again. Is there a way to, is there like a back button that
There is a back button, so let me just go to it, and I'll show you where it is.
That's on the right-hand corner that's, you know, facing down, and that works for some things. But, like, for example, in the Global Ice Viewer one on the site itself, I'd like to go back to the, you know, to the page before, and I can't figure out how to do that.
So which, so you see where it says back to map?
Oh.
So you're in the Global Ice Viewer on the two, on the before and after images. There's a little, on the left, a little triangle that says back to map.
Yeah, I think I'm on a different page. I'm on the one that says Global Ice Viewer and has the one with all the red dots on it.
Yeah. And where do you want to go back to?
Just the page before.
Oh, so just go into the top URL and push return and it'll start over again.
Okay.
The Global Ice Viewer opened in a separate page.
Yeah, it opened on a separate window. It should open in a separate window. So you wanted to go back to the climate.nasa.gov interactive page, or you wanted to go into the first page of the Global Ice Viewer?
Global Ice Viewer. So
yeah.
I see that it's not an intuitive thing, but with your...
Yeah, just to get to that front page. But if you wanted to get, let's say you're on the glacier page and you wanted to get to Greenland, you could just click to Greenland.
Yeah, that's going forward. I'm just thinking about going back.
Well, there is no really linear forward and back. You can kind of navigate around. But if you want to go to the very front main start page, you have to kind of open the whole thing again.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Laura, this is Peg Stephan.
She could just hit glaciers down at the bottom, and that would go to the Global Ice Viewer.
Right, but it doesn't go to the page before that.
Yeah, she wants to go to the start page.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to go to the start page, I just start it, restart it. That's how I do it. If I'm in Firefox, I re-click the URL. If I'm in Safari, I just click here to launch it again.
Okay.
Laura, Peg Stephan from NOAA.
Uh-huh.
Very nice
Hi.
Website, first
oh,
of all.
Thank you.
Very nice. I'm on the Greenland section of the Global Ice Viewer. And
yeah.
There's a little island to the right of Greenland. Is that Iceland or is that part
it
of Greenland?
It is Iceland, actually. And actually, that's a really good piece of feedback. I should probably label it.
Yeah, I was just saying, I've been to Iceland. I'm going, I think I recognize that piece of land. but I'm just thinking that that some of our international friends would probably not appreciate
that
being identified
really,
as Greenland.
That is a really, really good point. It should say Greenland and Iceland. I'm going to take
yeah.
that as a... You know, I was thinking, somebody's going to give me some awesome feedback today, and thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for
nice
that.
Nice folks in both places, by the way.
Yeah, that is the number one place I want to go. It's on my I'm going there list. So,
worthwhile.
Yeah, thank you. Well, as a geologist, everybody wants to go to Iceland, don't they?
And the Iceland has, Iceland has a nice video.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys are all ahead, which is good. I mean, to me, when you jump ahead, it means you're into it. So let's now go to slide number eight. And I was going to, on slide number eight, I've clicked the Greenland button, the Arctic button, and the Antarctic button to just give you an overview. And you'll see that on the Greenland page, there are six time-lapse videos. And if you mouse over the red dots, it just gives you the name of the glacier and a little image. And if you click on the red dot, you see a time-lapse video. And the reason we decided to go with these is because there really are no images of Greenland before 1979. The USGS did a survey of Greenland in 79, and those are the first images. So all the other places on the world, I had much older ice images. So Greenland, we decided to do some of these, really intense. My favorite one is the one called Store Glacier Calving. on Greenland. But if you go to Iceland, there's also images. And I'm just trying to see. I'm clicking on one of the glaciers in Iceland that I can't pronounce. And you're right, it does not say Iceland anywhere on there. So that is... Oh, yeah, okay. So in the other one, Svínafellsjökull, which I'm sure murderizing, this is one of many glaciers that drain off one of Iceland's most active volcanoes. So at least we're mentioning Iceland in there.
But it's not mentioned in the other one.
It's not mentioned on the other one, and it's not mentioned on the main page. So, yeah, I would agree that that's
an
error.
Easy enough to put in.
Yeah, easy enough to put in. So there's the six, there's the six time-lapse videos, which are, in my opinion, amazing. That's one of the reasons I'm dying to go there. And there's also a video about ice melt. It's actually a video that I produced myself. It's a NASA animation, and then we wrote a script for it and did an animation. So you'll see that there's that white bar there. If you click on the white bar, a little narrated animation comes up. So we talk about, remember earlier in this conversation, we're talking about the difference between interactives and animation. So this is clearly a narrated animation rather than an interactive. You click on it, and a little movie comes up talking about the ice melt over Greenland. So that's the Greenland. And then you'll see the next one over, and they all have the about button. The next one over is Arctic. And there's a couple of different choices. If you click on the Arctic, you can see a little narrated animation again. It's a NASA animation that we wrote a script for and then narrated. And so it's just a little short 50-second video about the sea ice trend. And I just did a screen grab of that so you can see it's a little video. And then there's a graphic with some information about how the Northwest Passage has now opened up. So that's the Arctic, and then if you look at the Antarctic, there's ice shelves, just labeling what the ice shelves are, because most people don't kind of even understand what Antarctica is. And then there's also ice flow. So the first one is the major ice shelves, the top white bar. And then the second one is an ice flow map showing you how fast the ice is melting. And then also those little red dots, you can see the Larsen B and the Wilkins ice shelf collapses as animated videos. So that's kind of some of my favorite stuff that I would hope gets much more broadly disseminated. And again, I'm really happy that people are clicking on the evidence page. I love that they are. But I would like to see a lot more people getting deeper, using this stuff in the classroom, using this stuff as part of their presentations, whatever it is that you do in your world, whether it is creating curriculum, developing trainings, workshops, whatever it is, please help yourself to all this stuff. It's really user-friendly, it's really fun, and I think it gets the message across about climate change in a really, really, really powerful way.
So are there smarter, if there's a way that you could also recognize James Balog in addition to Extreme Ice Survey, that would be cool.
So you want us to recognize James Balog personally? Because I've actually, to get the videos, I've interacted with Extreme Ice Survey a lot. Uh-huh. And they were pretty satisfied with the way that we were presenting it. You'll see, I just closed it, but I'll open it again. You'll see that on all the videos that we have, the Extreme Ice Survey logo is up there. And if you look on the credits, I didn't highlight this, but if you look at the bottom there, sources, credits, find out more, and back to the website. Uh-huh. So if you look at the credits, you will see Greenland Time-Lapse Movies Extreme Ice Survey, sources, find out more. Yeah, I've just linked them to the ExtremeIceSurvey.org website, and I've credited Extreme Ice Survey rather than James Balog himself. And, you know, unless you're somebody from Extreme Ice Survey telling me that, you know, they were pretty happy with it, with the way that...
It's just that I see that you've credited Tad Pfeffer and, you know, other photographers, but I just didn't know what the policy was in terms of who... when you credit...
Well, it seems that, and again, I don't mean to argue with you, but isn't it the whole Extreme Ice Survey team rather than one person
well,
who's responsible?
I just know that some of the photographs, because I know James Balog. And
yeah, of course. I've met him, too.
Yeah, just to say that some of those images are very specifically his photographs. And if he's cool with it, I'm cool with it. I just didn't know what the...
Right. Well, I thought that they actually mounted those cameras there as a team, and that then, of course, they collected. If you go, believe me, Extreme Eye Survey is second to my own website, the best website in the world. I love their website.
Yeah,
but they detail very much, and there's actually a documentary, I believe, that they've made, or maybe even two, where they talk about how the team goes up and plants these cameras, and the cameras collect the footage, and then, you know, they bring it back down and analyze it, and, you know, it's a .org website, so they disseminate it, and, that team is wonderful, but I was under the impression that it was a team effort rather than an individual effort, which
is
why we ended up going with the credit to the team rather than to the individual.
Sure. It's just in the art world, like if you use the photograph of, say, what the one that I call the kissing icebergs, you know, that you would have a credit for that person, but that may not be the way of science. And like I said, if Extreme Ice Survey people are happy with it, then that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I can always double-check with them. I can put it on my list of things to do, because I do interact with Extreme Ice Survey pretty regularly.
Uh-huh.
You know, with everybody, and a lot of the images from the earlier one from the glaciers from Alaska or from the Snow and Ice Data Center, and they pretty much tell you exactly how they want their images credited. So I just, whatever they tell me, I put as the credit. So, when I originally got permission, because they had to, I couldn't just download those videos off their website. They sent me, this is kind of a funny side story, but so to get the footage onto our site, I had Extreme Ice Survey send me their files on disks, right, all those videos. So I get these things on disks, and every time I put them in my computer, it crashes my computer, and I'm like, what's the deal? So I take it to the, you know, 20-something-year-old computer whiz down the hall, and he says, the reason why these things are crashing on your computer is their IMAX size. That's how big the files are. So they sent me, so I don't happen to have an IMAX theater in my back pocket, so I have the files. If I wanted to watch these things on an IMAX, I actually have the discs that would play to that size. So, so they sent it to me so that I could use it. So I presume that they okayed the copyright for me to use it without, you know, which is saying it, what do you call it, Extreme Eye Survey. Anyway, I thought it was kind of funny. So if anybody has an IMAX, I have some footage of some glaciers. It's really cool. No one taking me up on the IMAX footage? All right. Can we move on to the next one? Was there any other comments? And I'll double check with the Extreme Ice Survey people. I don't mind doing that. Okay, so let's go on and move to the slide 9. And there's only, I think, not that many more slides, so I don't want to go over too much because I know everybody's busy. This is the state of flux. So we always have side-by-side images of change, and most of these are from satellite images. A lot of them are due to climate change, but some of them are, you know, other reasons of change. Some of them are urbanization, natural hazards, fires, floods, and they show how the planet is in a state of flux. So I just gave one example. This is just a year apart, August 8th, a view of a river in Pakistan, and then August 11th, a year later, of the same river. So all of these at the bottom, they include the dates, descriptions, identify which instrument and which spacecraft in that document at the bottom. And if you actually go to the State of Flux Images of Change page, you'll see how big the library of images is.
Mm.
So 5 × 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So right now there's over 40 of these image before and after image pairs. So the one that's up right now, you can see three images. It's how Riyadh has expanded from 1972 to 2000. So this is a urbanization image, and you can see it from space. So again, these are really useful for any number of, you know, articles, lectures, teaching, opportunities, etc. So please use these things. And again, they're really highly interactive. You click on it, you know, people can, you know, pick their favorite images, etc. So I'm going to go on to slide 10 now. And this is what we call Climate Reel. And in Climate Reel, what I've done is I've gathered together what I consider the top NASA videos about climate change. And they're all here. So I've got the top 10 is one of the categories. And it's the top 10 videos that I actually made the first four myself. So I guess that's why I put them in the top 10. But anyway, there's the top 10 climate movies. They're all NASA. And then I have them categorized as water, atmosphere, frozen places, and life. So if you're looking for a short science video, there most of them have been somewhere between 3 to 5 minutes. If you're looking for a short video about climate that's made from NASA, this is where you can find it. Okay?
It would help if you put the times on them, Laura.
Oh, how many minutes? Oh, that's a really
good
idea.
Because teachers are not going to even go there if they don't know it's a quick one, you know? So.
Oh, you're so smart. That'd be so easy to do. We could put it, you see where the credit is? We could put,
correct,
like, the number of minutes right there. Put times on vids. That is a really good idea. Okay. Thank you very much. That could be done within, let's say, a week to 2 weeks. We could have that done. All right, very cool. All right, so, and yes, so most of them are somewhere in the 3 to 5 minute range. So the next slide, I did make announcement, the Climate Literacy Network, when this first went live, but here it is again. This is under the Educator button. So it's a 3-page downloadable PDF document, and the standards are on the main page. And basically, it's just a document for teachers, both middle school and high school is the age range that I was shooting for, but I believe you could adapt it for younger, and it's just 6 ways to use this website in your classroom. And there's the goals are listed, things for the teachers and students to do, some other options. So again, if you wanted to, you know, teach it to younger kids, or if you wanted to do it a slightly different way, or make it instead of one class time, a whole week long of activities, and then outcomes that could be expected. So again, these if you didn't have access to the internet, you could print it out and do something like that in the classroom. So it goes over the time machine, the sea level viewer, these images of change, the ice viewer, the climate reel, and eyes on the earth 3Ds. It's just tips for teachers to use in the classroom. So again, you guys are welcome to download it, to hand it out, to point teachers to it, or you can point teachers to me, and I will point teachers to it. I put slide 12 in there. Last time I gave a presentation, and then I met some of the people, and they said, oh, we thought you were like 60. And so I put a photo of myself in there. So that's me. Anyway, I am 60. I just don't look it. Now, so my hair's a little shorter now. But it's true. Now, I'm not joking. When I teach oceanography, and when I bring up this website, I swear students stop texting for like 5 seconds, and they do pay attention. So again, that's just one anecdotal thing. I've also taught with it in lab class, so we have these little laptops in our lab class that students share, and the students play. They play, but like I'll have a handout where they're supposed to click on this and answer some questions, and it sometimes they forget that they're learning something and they're just having fun. So I just have 3 more slides. I realize it's you know, my time's probably up very soon, but the next slide. Hello.
Sorry to interrupt. This is Tamara. I will have to leave, but I do want you to continue. You can continue on this line. Because I really do want your entire presentation recorded. So could please go on, even though I have to leave. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. God, I made 15 slides thinking that, you know, I would only take like 20 minutes. So apologies for that. I guess I'm a big blabbermouth. Anyway, so now we're going on to the ICE 3D part, which if you're on the home page, it's you can get to it from the top right. It's called Eyes on the Earth 3D. It's under the Explore banner. If you go up to that second slide that I have on this presentation, all those yellow arrows, if you find, if you lose anything, just look at the yellow arrow. I tried to make it really easy for everybody to see. So this is kind of like I don't know, the big fancy dessert of our website that I hope that people really, really indulge and gobble up. If you get to, so what do you have to do? The first thing it tells you to do is it tells you to download the WebUnity browser, which is free, and it should take, like, at the top a minute or a few seconds, depending on the speed of your computer. So you download this thing, and it's like a computer game. This one is much more like a computer game than anything else. You can spin the world. You can speed up the satellites. You can zoom in. You can this is the most interactive, immersive thing that we have. It's pretty exciting. But what I want, in addition to exciting people, I want you to actually download the data. So if you look, there's an All Missions button, and you can see real-time where the satellites are right now circling the Earth. And at the bottom, you can play around with the speed, or you can click real-time. But there's, you see where I said, there's five missions, Aqua, JSON, MODIS, GRACE, and CloudSat, that actually have data. So you can download the near real-time data. So Aqua, you can get carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, water vapor, and temperature. JSON 2, you can get sea level. MODIS, you get ice cover. GRACE, you get gravity. And CloudSat, you get these vertical cloud structure maps. And they're really awesome. I mean, if I kind of had a fight yesterday with what's the definition of awesome, because I think people use the word awesome for things that aren't awesome. This is awesome, okay? This would be in my definition. This would qualify. I think some people get confused about which data can you find, so that's why I wrote that right there very clearly. That's the mission, and that's the data that's available. And over there on the left, you can see that's what sea surface height data looks like. And then if you'll click on to slide 14, I just gave you some examples of I just did screenshots. So that's the carbon dioxide data, and this is for like the last 3 days. This is gravity data from GRACE. You can see how up at the top the Aqua little orange button is lit up for carbon dioxide. The green GRACE button is lit up for gravity, and I don't know, for some reason that air temperature data isn't lit up. But this is all near real time. It's clickable, spinnable, zoomable, and interactive. So what the hell does that mean? Clickable means you can click on anything or mouse over it, and it'll give you that the key on the bottom will tell you depending on what it is. So if gravity, it'll tell you there's a gravity bar. CO2, it'll tell you the amount of CO2 as you zoom over it. Spinnable means just like kind of any other Google type thing, if you click on the Earth, you can spin it. So I'm in control, I can spin the Earth. I can also zoom in or zoom out. There's a little zoom in or zoom out button, or you can actually click on the planet and that'll zoom you in or zoom you out. So they're fully interactive, any of these things. You can change the speed of the zoom. You can turn, if you see those bar on the left, you can turn the light on. You can turn the city names on. You can turn the relief on or off, any of these things, and you can also go full screen with them. So what I'm hoping is that, of course, because I'm a teacher, the students start using this and teachers start using this in the classroom, but certainly if you're elsewhere than the classroom, please use this in your articles and your documents and your lectures and everywhere. So the last, did anybody have any questions about this? Okay, so the last slide, slide 15, I just wanted to kind of give you guys a heads up about what's coming next. Within, I would say, the next 2 weeks, we're going to launch some new learning modules that are actually full-blown, you know, could take a teacher's, let's say, a week to teach these learning modules. They're not just like a do this in a classroom or one-hour class. Full-blown learning modules will be launched in about a week to 2 weeks. We're also going to be launching a weekly newsletter, and I will send a sign-up, subscribe, invite email to everybody on the day that the newsletter launches so that anybody who wants to sign up can sign up. We're also going to be changing the educator button so that there's, instead of linking to every single educational resource that's out there, which seems kind of out of the scope, and I also think that there's other places that do that better than we do, so we're going to link, we're going to become, instead of a site for all educational resources on climate, a meta site pointing to what we consider the best other sites, and of course CleanNet will likely be the top of that link. We are also this year, 2011, announcing we're going to be producing an Earth Science Climate Science video series, and then the brand new interactive is going to be a greenhouse gas interactive that's going to be similar, except hopefully better, than the Global ICUR and some of the other interactives that we already have. So it's going to be kind of an immersive, clickable, playable interactive on greenhouse gases. So I think I have done with all the slides, and if anybody had any questions, now would be the time.
Laura, this is Marta. Are you in touch with the Science and Entertainment Exchange?
I just was there on Friday.
Okay, me too.
Yeah.
Good.
Oh, we didn't meet. Yeah, I had my head kind of exploded when I was there. There's so many different things simultaneously going on.
Yeah, I just
want to
make sure that those guys know about this, because it's a very cool thing. They'll love it. And all the people who came.
Yeah. I mean, we're trying our hardest to broadly disseminate. And we've only been live. I mean, this site was created in mid-2008. So we've been around for, I guess that makes 2 years and some change. So, you know, some of the other sites have been around, you know, like Earth Observatory, I think, for, you know, over a decade. So we're hoping to make our mark. Certainly we need your help with that. You know, some of the input people have given me today has been excellent. So I appreciate you for that.
This is Alan.
Laura, hey,
just a quick comment that I found out how to go back on those interactives.
Oh, great.
Well, it's essentially the same as restarting. If you just go into your browser menus and click reload.
Exactly.
But you don't have to restart then. But it's restarting.
Yeah, I just re-click, exactly, so you can kind of, you restart it or reload it. Thank you for that. Was the person who was asking that still on the line?
That was me, that was Marta. So I'm on Eyes on the Earth 3D, so what do I do to go back?
Eyes on the, well, where are Eyes on the Earth 3D is like a big page. Where do you want to go back to?
Yeah.
The main place.
Oh, you want to go back to the Global Climate Change site?
To the main site.
Yeah, there's a couple different ways you can get back there. If you look on the bottom of the page, it says Global Climate Change website.
Wow, it could, yeah, that whole part could be more intuitive, I think.
To be honest with you, I guess I should, you know, this is secret, so if I tell you, I'll have to kill you. But there is a Eyes on the Earth 2.0 being developed right now that's more intuitive.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
It's just the back function to be able to go back.
There's a whole lot of things that aren't necessarily, you know, how people keep comparing it to Google Earth and how Google Earth is so intuitive and, you know, this is very fancy, but sometimes people get lost in it. So I've actually made documents on how to use Eyes 3D and little videos, and those were all rejected to just an entire redo. So was there someone else had a question, I think?
I was going to make a comment, or actually I got a question, I guess. I was wondering if you're on the two biggest earth science teacher listservs that I know of, which are the Esprit list and the NST Earth Science Teachers list, because questions come up. I know Marion just posted a link to CleanNet in response to a question about climate data. I actually see that Jim Ebert, who is the listserv master or whatever it's called for the Esprit list, says they now have 1,608 subscribers from 33 states and 3 countries. And if folks aren't aware of those, I can send out the links for
subscribing to
those.
Can you do that for me? Because I would love that. Because maybe, you know, just please do that.
And that's a way to reach a lot of teachers very quickly.
Please. Okay, can you can either send it to me, you know me,
I'll
Don,
send it
right?
To the list.
I'll
send it to the list.
That would be fantastic.
People are interested too.
I'll try to throw it up on our website too.
Yay.
Yep.
Who's in charge of the website? Is that you, Scott?
Yeah.
Do you mind changing my name to the proper spelling?
It's already done.
Do that.
Oh, yay, thank you.
Get old, Laura, before they'll do that.
We'll fix it for you.
Sorry.
It's just, you know, my whole life. It's my whole life. It's happened, so it doesn't surprise me.
Apologies.
Oh, you did it.
Thank you. Anything? Was there any other comments or questions? I appreciate everything. This is really helpful. And, Don, I can't wait to get that email from you and, you know, move forward with that.
This is a fabulous site. Somehow we're going to have to weave it into the clean collection.
Yes.
We've seen so many things that are nowhere near like this. This is so
the
great,
problem
yeah.
with this site on the clean collection is the original clean collection was looking for kind of these fully developed things. And what I was hoping...
We'll figure it out.
Yep.
Oh, well, you know, and that's what you guys are excellent at doing that. So that's what I'm kind of hoping to do is get this into the hands of the people who know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. But this is Caroline Lewis. This also speaks to the need for us to have this call and log on every Tuesday if we can, because I have had this site, and I have not gone through the layers of it. And so taking the time to listen and to really just do it. You know, the paradigm shift in my head is awesome, but I think we are being inundated with excellent stuff that's getting buried. So I want to thank Laura for doing this and the CLN for allowing us to do this for each other every now and then, because we got to do it. We got to get the good stuff that's out there and put it in front and center, I think.
So I have a question and a comment. One is, I'll give you the comment first. I start school on next Tuesday, so I'm not on this conference. I teach that oceanography class that you saw me standing in front of on Tuesdays. So I won't probably talk to you guys while I'm trying over spring break until June. The other thing is, and I really want to know this, so if you don't have time to tell me now, send me an email. Why do you think it is that people have gone on our website, like you, Caroline, so many times and have never bothered to go deeper in? I'm dying to know the answer to that question.
Well, I would like to know, too, but I think the answer is time. It's literally... I am drowning in obligations and opportunities. We all are. And not knowing which are the opportunities that will give me the most bang for my buck, the buck being time, it's tough. And I think the CLN has really helped me. And, I mean, there have been times I've been on the call thinking, not relevant to what I'm doing. I don't have to spend the hour on this. But there are times when I'm going, let me check it out, and it has really yielded wonderful things. So it's not a question we can answer. It's just life today.
Right. Well, if anybody else wants to try to, you know, answer that, because I ask myself that question every day. It's like, why are people only clicking on the evidence page, you know? And I even thought this morning, I'm like, oh, I'm going to bore people with the stuff that they already know. So, you know, it kind of surprises me that,
we're embarrassed. I'm embarrassed.
No, don't be embarrassed. You're making me feel like at least I'm doing a service.
This whole long list of fabulous things, you know, underneath home on the main page, you might just at the very top say have a section that just says why use this site, and then have on it, you know, like the idiot's guide for people with no time.
Idiot's guide.
No, I mean,
maybe that one, is it? It's my slide number 4 with the giant red circles and the giant red yellow arrows.
Like, what can you? Here are the questions. Like, you know, this, you know, you can go here. Not the questions are, but why use this site is like, you know, you can see these cool things. You can, I don't know. There might be a whole. It might be fun for us to, you know, those of us who don't have any time to say. After looking at it, to just put in why we found this thrilling.
Well, if you guys want to take page 4 or slide number 4 and, you know, I don't know, some of you write newsletters or, you know, disseminate, I think perhaps slide 4 is the best slide according to you guys, because it has, you know, the giant arrows and the, you know, the I could redo that if you want me to.
I'll give you credit for it, and I'd like to use it in my PowerPoint presentation.
Take it. Anybody's welcome to take any slide from any of this and use it, change it. Do whatever you want with
along
it.
Along the lines of some of the suggestions, how about, do you want to move the earth? Do you want to see what do you want? Well, you're at the right place. This is all on the site.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
Well, something like, do you want to move the earth? Do you want to see? Do it interactive in some kind of exciting question to say, well, you're at the right place. Check out.
Where would you put that, though?
That's the problem. There's a lot of stuff on the front page.
Yeah.
Just trailing across the bottom, perhaps.
Right, like a what do you call, what a ticker thing across the bottom.
Yeah.
Are you a PR guy?
No, that's what I would say. Put it right at the top. Because if you don't, it's the 3-second rule. If you don't catch people in 3 seconds, you're done.
It
you got that
debate,
right.
You know, we go for, and I'm not, I'm a content person. I'm the one who I do all the content stuff. But I'm not a web designer, you know. And there's people who specialize in kind of designing and, you know, I welcome anybody's feedback.
If you can pose questions, I do this at the beginning of one of my chemistry classes. Do you want to know why food in the refrigerator lasts longer? Do you want to know why you such and such?
Right.
Well, you've come to the right place. So tell them what questions they could answer, questions that could interest them, that could be
questions.
Answered.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good.
You guys are helpful. Thank you so much for the feedback.
Thank you.
Well,
yeah.
Please use
really
it copiously, and do keep in touch with me, you guys, because, you know, I very rarely will be able to get back on this telecon until, you know, the end of the semester, so please keep in touch with me. You've got my email and everything, so, and you've got my phone number, so I am here to answer all climate NASA questions for you.
And Laura, this is Marta. So would you be, like, I don't know when in my life I would actually be able to do this, but, like, let's say we pulled together a whole group of artists, for example. Would you be able to do the Idiot's Guide walkthrough of the site?
Hell yeah.
Okay, cool.
In fact, I would like to do it so often that I'm really good at giving that presentation. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
Very
I would
good.
Like
I
to
just,
give it often. Yes.
I just wanted to share, this is Jay in Wisconsin, I had my phone muted during your presentation about this wonderful product you have here, and I went and got one of our 4-H educators and brought her in for part of it, showed her that 3D thing on the actual site, and she is just really enthused for some of the 4-H groups in our county here. So she sees what
there you go.
Her programming, so thanks very much.
Well, I think I'm going to send an email to the group, too, that says, if you're using this, can you just give me sort of, you know, give a screen grab of your 4-H product or something like that, and just tell me that you're using it, because I would really like to know who, you know, who's using it, who are our users, and what they're doing with it. So so please, you know, if you're going to use it, tell me all about it. I want to know.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Laura.
Thank you.
Thank you. And it's good to hear all your voices. Hopefully we'll see each other soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, Scott.
And I'm going to go fix your name spelling right now.
I already
thank
did it.
You. Scott already
did it.
Oh, you already
did it.
Okay.
Thank you. Scott?
I think.
Yeah.
Is this recorded, like if I wanted to just get
yes,
a copy?
Yes, it is.
And it's going to be on the website eventually?
Yeah, probably within the next day.
Oh, cool. You're awesome. It's so good to hear your voice. Thank you.
That's great. Thanks
okay,
again.
Cool. Okay.
Have a good session.
Okay. Thank you.
I know.
Okay. Bye.